Hello, my name's Trey Campbell. I'm a sports map contributor for motorsports. You know, just kind of all the bases of racing, NASCAR, all that kind of stuff. But I'm joined here today by one of IndyCar's brightest stars, I think. World-renowned Indy 500 champion, Alexander Rossi. Alex, thank you so much for joining me. Can I call you Alex, by the way, or is it kind of an Alexander type of thing?
That's totally fine. Thanks for asking.
No problem. I know that might be one of the things that would kind of make me mad if I was Alexander and people were just calling me Alex all the time, you know?
No worries at all.
All right, cool. So, obviously a big race here in Austin at Circuit of the Americas, one of your favorite tracks I think you were talking about. So, testing went well. I saw you were number one on the speed charts. How was the test with everybody aside from that? Like, how was it getting a feel for this kind of new track? And a new kind of, I know you drove an F1, but like driving an Indy car, it's a new car on a brand new track. How'd that go for you?
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it definitely was, it might as well have been a new track because the cars are so much different. But yeah, I mean, it was a really positive 2 days for, I think, the whole Andretti Autosport organization. And, you know, we learned a lot of kind of what works and what doesn't and how to maximize the car around that track. And, you know, definitely having some prior circuit knowledge was definitely a good thing for us. And look forward to using that to our advantage when we go back next month.
Yeah, and that kind of you know, goes into my first question. I was going to ask you, I know you made a start there for the Manor team. I think Manor Marasha back in 2015. I think that was your best result there at you finished 12th. How does that kind of translate over to what you're doing now? I know you said it's basically a new track, but, you know, you kind of have that experience. Does that kind of translate a little bit?
Very roughly, yes. I mean, it's still the same racetrack, right? Regardless of the car you're driving.
Absolutely.
You know the areas where you need to focus on to kind of maximize lap time, and you know little tricks for certain corners, but at the end of the day, you know, it's a very different race car, and it achieves its performance in a completely different way to an F1 car. So you got to kind of rework your driving style a little bit, and in a way, relearn the track or at least some parts of it in order to be quick in an Indy car.
For me, I've watched both sports, but for kind of the newer fan that's kind of trying to check out both F1 and IndyCar, could you kind of explain a little bit what makes the two cars different?
The biggest thing really is money. You know,
absolutely.
They're both open wheel cars. You know, they both have a huge amount of downforce, very lightweight. But the biggest thing is, you know, a Formula One team's budget. You know, if you look at like a Mercedes-Benz, they spend, you know, over $300 million a year, whereas a single car operation to go run an IndyCar is in the 4 to 5 million range. So it's a tenth of the budget. And, you know, as a result of that, you know, the cars are just, you know, a little bit rougher. You know, there's no power steering. They slide around a lot more. You have to work a lot harder to kind of achieve the lap time. But at the end of the day, I mean, they're still the second quickest open wheel race cars on the planet. And we're doing it at a much smaller budget than Formula One teams are. And with that being said, I mean, the racing that we were able to put on and the show that we can create because, you know, aside from the engine in the IndyCar, all the cars are spec. So everyone is really dealing with the same package. It puts a lot more emphasis on the teams and drivers, and you have results that are a lot closer.
Yeah, I didn't know that they were all spec. I knew that they had made some aero changes. I remember, I think if it was 2017, 2016, around that time, they had a bigger, like kind of wing towards the end that punched a bigger hole in the air that made them closer. Now it's reduced significantly. So I guess, does that kind of spread the cars out a little bit more? I guess if you could confirm that, like, has there been kind of a difference between the 2018 and the 2017 cars?
Yeah, there's quite a big difference. I mean, actually, I think the racing's closer on the road and street courses. I think that there definitely was some separation on the ovals, which was a package improvement that we needed to make this offseason. So I think that that'll kind of return to its normal ways this year. I mean, you know, we introduced a completely new aero package and all new body work. So, of course, there's going to be a little bit of a learning curve, you know, to make it exactly as we want it. But I think the first attempt, especially on the road and street courses, was really, really good. And we saw some of the best racing we've ever seen.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the races I really enjoyed was that that Long Beach race, I believe you won. And another race was the Grand Prix of St. Petersburg, which was a great race up until the end, I know, with what happened there with Wickens. But overall, the street course outcomes and the product you see really improved. You know, so just overall, though, another question kind of about this track, or just road courses overall, with you being kind of the world-renowned racer, driving an F1 and racing on tracks like Spa and Nuremberg and Silverstone, does Circuit of the Americas kind of give you, like, is there any track you can kind of compare it to, or does it kind of stand out on its own?
I mean, it was designed by the same guy that designed a lot of the F1 tracks, so there is some similarities for sure, and I think one of the main things with Austin is they tried to incorporate, you know, some of the famous corner complexes from racetracks in Europe. I mean, the S's are kind of reminiscent of Maggots and Beckett's at Silverstone.
Yeah.
The stadium section is very similar to kind of what you have at Hockenheim.
Yeah, that's kind of what I saw out of that big stadium kind of section where it kind of has the glass type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think that in the design of it, they tried to incorporate some European elements as well. So, yes, it's very much a track of kind of what I grew up racing from that standpoint.
Yeah, another similarity I kind of saw, I don't race, so I don't really know. I can't really look at it from a driver's perspective, but that long straightaway kind of reminds me a little bit of Circuit Gilles Villeneuve.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. I mean, at the end of the day, a straight really doesn't mean a whole lot to us.
Yeah.
Just sitting there waiting for the next corner. But yeah, for sure. I mean, Austin's a very special track in that sense that there's, you know, it's got a little bit of everything. And I think that was a priority of the designers when they were drawing the track to start with.
Yeah. So to kind of move forward here a little bit, you had probably a breakout season, I would think, winning those three races at Mid-Ohio, Long Beach, and of course at Pocono, which was great racing up until what happened, unfortunately, and with Wickens. And I know he's doing better. Shout out to Robert Wickens. But just overall, where do y'all feel like y'all are in a much better place? I know that was your first year with Andretti Autosport. Do y'all feel like y'all are kind of, and the chemistry is a much better?
I think that, you know, it's the biggest thing was, you know, when we went to the Spec Aero kit in 2018, you know, a lot of the deficits that we previously had in 16 and 17 kind of went out the window, and we were able to kind of show what we were capable of. And in the winter of 16, we made some personnel changes that have really started to pay dividends 3 years later. And the team's in the best place that I've ever seen it, and we have a lot of confidence going into 2019.
Also, yeah, adding a good friend of yours, I think, Connor Daly, will be coming on for the Indy 500. I'm sure that kind of helps out a little bit. One more teammate you can kind of bounce ideas off of, I'd imagine.
Yeah, for sure. It's great that Connor's going to be able to join us and bring with him the U.S. Air Force partnership and bring that to Andretti is pretty cool. And to have five American drivers for the greatest race in the world is pretty awesome.
Yeah, for sure. To kind of segue into the ovals, you mentioned the Indy 500 there. Like, when you started IndyCar, I think, back in 2016, were the ovals kind of a tough learning curve? I know driving an F1 and all that, transitioning into ovals, it seems a lot easier with, you know, you're just going four right turns. But coming in, I'm sure it's a little bit more difficult than it seems. And how is the learning curve driving in ovals as compared to what you've been driving your whole career?
I mean, it's definitely a pretty big one. You're right. I mean, it's a lot more complex than a lot of people realize. In some ways, it's even more complex than a road or street course. But I was fortunate to have, you know, Ryan Hunter-Reay and Marco Andretti, two of the best oval drivers in IndyCar as teammates to kind of help me and answer questions and get me up to speed. So, you know, I was a lucky rookie coming in to have such experienced teammates to lean upon, and now it's all the same. I mean, you just show up at a racetrack regardless of the size or shape, and just go out and try and win.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing I kind of noticed on the ovals, you had probably the most interesting pass, or like last year in the Indy 500, where obviously when you passed all those cars in turn one, that was probably the most interesting part of that race, I would think. But like, do you think that it takes time to kind of make those type of moves? Like, obviously you can't just go straight into the ovals and just make big moves like that. How long did it kind of take for you to get comfortable enough to kind of make those decisions?
I don't know. I mean, I was fortunate that in 16 and 17, you know, we had cars where we were up front all day. So, you know, I wasn't really put in that position to have to do that. Obviously, last year we had an issue in qualifying and started 32nd out of 33. So it was an opportunity that presented itself, and we had to move forward, and that was the best way that I found to do that. But I can't really say, because, like I said, I mean, in 2017 we started third and kind of ran in the top three for most of the race. In 2016, obviously, we were on a completely different island with fuel strategy, where I wasn't really racing any other cars except myself. So I think last year was the first kind of opportunity that I've had to actually go fight and pass cars like that.
Yeah, and kind of to go back to that, like, do you prefer, I'm sure every driver prefers to start up front, but at the end of the day, when you kind of look at that highlight reel of you blowing past all those guys, is it kind of cooler to say, hey, I came all the way from 32nd and finished, like, in the top four? I think you finished fourth in that race, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Is it kind of cooler to say, hey, I made all these moves?
Not really. I mean, I prefer the most boring Sunday race possible, which is starting in front and just cruising and winning the race. So, you know, that's always kind of your goal and what you're aiming for. But, yeah, I mean, in terms of if you're going to take some consolation from not winning, at least you have some cool videos to show people, I suppose.
Absolutely. So this year, I think in the offseason, you ran the Baja 1000, if I'm not mistaken, for Team Honda. You drove the Ridgeline. How was that experience, and would you ever want to go back to maybe running the Baja 1000 again?
Oh, it was an awesome experience, I loved every second of it, and I definitely plan on going back and racing the 51st anniversary next year.
That's awesome. I mean, just to see a lot of these drivers kind of step out of their comfort zone and race in other vehicles is really kind of what makes racing so unique. You know, I obviously, there's been lots of crossover with IndyCar and sports car, and I know you've done some sports car races as well. So it's really good to kind of see a crossover from not only IndyCar to sports car, but IndyCar to Baja 1000 as well.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I feel very fortunate that kind of Honda has opened those opportunities for me to obviously do the Baja 1000, but also you know, to race with Acura and Team Penske in the IMSA prototype. So it's been a busy couple months for me, and you know, looking forward to obviously St. Pete coming up next week, but also the 12 Hours of Sebring the following weekend.
Yeah, that's definitely going to be a busy 14 days there for you. You got St. Petersburg, which is another great street circuit. I think that was actually the first ever street circuit the incarnation of IndyCar before ran on back when they were the IRL. So definitely some history there. Another kind of thing that I saw this year is that, you know, there's plenty of other new tracks. Well, there's one other new track that's really notable, and that's Laguna Seca. How excited are you for the Laguna Seca race?
I'm super excited. That was a track that really introduced me to racing when I was a young kid, going as a fan with my father. So to be able to go back there kind of brings things full circle, and is another testament to the direction that IndyCar is heading.